And we're joined now by Norman Otis Richmond himself, Uhuru News, a veteran radio man known to everybody in Toronto, actually. How you doing, Norman?
Not bad. How are you doing?
Not bad. You've been doing a lot of really interesting radio lately, and very apropos of our all the discussion of Black Lives Matter and the debate about degrees of racism experienced by Black Americans, Black Canadians. You were talking to Mr. Cole recently, who's really become the best-known voice on the subject of carding, or as you say, point out, racial. It's the same racial profiling in the U.S. and carding here.
Yeah, Desmond, I was on. I had him on my show. He had me on his show the first Sunday of African Liberation Month. So he invited me, or I invited him on my show, mm-hmm. and basically he talked about the whole question of, you know, we're talking about martyrs, African martyrs. And, you know, there was, you know, when we talk about martyrs, we're not only talking about Lumumba and Bunchy Carter and people like that. We're also talking about people like Sandra Bland, who was killed in Texas. And we're also talking about someone by the name of Garfield Belfont, who was born in Toronto. He got killed by the police in 1955. Mm-hmm. And he was a Spadina in college. He was killed I think it was a laboratory there, but I mean, so we're trying to, we talked about that, and we also talked about the whole question of Black History Month, and some people have been promoting the notion that instead of Black History Month, we should refer to it as African Liberation Month, and as everyone knows that Black History Month began in 1926 as a Negro History Week, and mm-hmm. it became a month in the 60s, and then the banks, and you know, I started to say the name of the bank, but the banks have taken it over in this town, in this country.
Well,
and then
that and Caravana.
He was basically saying, okay, so we went from a week mm-hmm. to a month. And it's time to go, instead of dealing with just history, and I don't like to put down George Washington Carver, but, you know, Malcolm X was very hard on George Washington Carver, the Peanut Man. But instead of just dealing with the Peanut Man, we should also deal with people like Dessalines, Toussaint, Christophe, Ya Asantewaa, and the Black Lives Matter. Uh-huh. And, you know, as far as the Black Lives Matter, I think that's a movement, and it's left. You have a left, right, and a center, and they're not making any demands, and I think that's problematic. But
By the way, the original concept from the African American professor was to actually devote it to study, right?
Oh, Carter G. Woodson's position was that you would take a subject. For example, this is the 50th year of the Black Panther Party, so basically last year we would have studied the Black Panther Party, and then we would present our evidence during uh-huh. February. That was the whole concept. So, you know, we could talk about, the Black Panther Party, how it was actually started in Alabama as mm-hmm. opposed to Oakland.
Yes.
You know, there were Black Panther parties set up in New York City, and mm-hmm. I think the founder of the Black Panther Party in New York City was a man by the name of Maxwell Curtis Stanford Jr., a.k.a. Muhammad Ahmed. Mm-hmm. And then you had the Black Panther. Well, he got permission to start the Black Panther Party in New York from SNCC, Stokely Carmichael, who was Stokely then became.
It was Stokely who coined the phrase Black Power. Right?
It was Stokely and.
Or made it known.
It was Stokely and Willie Ricks, Mukasa Willie Ricks. But, what's his name, wrote a book called Black Power. Richard Wright had written a book on Black Power in the 50s. And, Stokely had the – Willie Ricks's job was to go around and fire everybody up. So when Stokely said Black Power, everybody would shout it.
Yeah.
But it's credited with Stokely.
You know, people should use the internet and go back and look at those old films. You can actually see Stokely walking. I remember him distinctly in a T-shirt in a crowd saying Black Power when it was a fresh chant. Slogan, and people were thinking, "Wow, I never heard that before."
There's pictures of Kwame Ture, Martin Luther King, and Willie Ricks Omukasa. I think he just had a birthday, but his son actually went to school in Cuba. Mm-hmm. Willie, you know, Mukasa actually went to finish your medical school in Cuba, so he's a very interesting person.
Yes. Well, he went as Cubans. We know he got a good education.
Yes.
We're talking to Norman Otis Richmond, and we've just said we're talking Black Panthers, and there's a film out. You saw it, and I've seen some debate about it. I just read today an article in Black Agenda Report. The basic thesis was it's okay, except that it's done by a liberal. What's your take on it?
I completely agree with that. And it's done by a liberal, and they demonize Huey P. Newton. And Huey P. Newton, we always said I shouldn't say we always said, because Huey was a type of a person that, you know, basically, if you notice, many of the criticisms of Huey came about after Huey was dead, because Huey was like, they used to call him like he was like Sugar Ray Robinson, or he was middleweight. I mean, he was good with his hands. But, you know, Huey was not perfect, but our position had always been that his merits outweighed his demerits. But if you see this film, the first time I saw the film was at the Bloor Cinema. And when I saw it, when I walked out, there was a young brother who had dreads. I don't know if he was a Rasta or not. He basically said the problem was not the problem with the movement was not the repression against the state from the state, but the problem was Huey Newton. Mm-hmm. And then the second time I saw the film, which was at the Carlton Cinema a couple of days ago, people walked out there saying that Eldridge Cleaver was the problem. And so, I mean, it was like it gave the estate a pass.
Yeah.
And it was a liberal interpretation. For example, Al Prentice Bunchy Carter from Los Angeles is not in the film. He was assassinated. He and John Huggins at UCLA. That's not even in there. I understand, but I spoke to Stanley Nelson and I asked him about that. They had him on Skype, and I asked him what had happened, and he said that I think they had interviewed Bunchy Carter's oldest brother, and that was it didn't make the final cut.
Yeah, and as you know, the problem is that, of course, by the way, it strikes me there's the issue of, you know, the liberals when they look at the Black Panthers, all they see is guns.
Yes,
they don't hear the word socialism, which is actually used every day of the week and in all the journals. If you read those papers, and I used to read them, is that full of a socialist project.
And the whole question of internationalism, I mean, it was the Black Panther Party and groups like the League of Revolutionary Black Workers and the SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and the Republic of New Africa that took a position that was pro-Palestinian, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a lot of heat for that because
it was unheard of.
A lot of the liberals.
People didn't talk in public about the issue of the Palestinians.
You don't support, some people under the table, they tried to use the fact, the Arabs enslaved us. I don't know if the Palestinians did that, but but, you know, anything to get away from, they didn't want to touch that hot potato because that would mess with their grants.
Yeah. Well, it's a fact that they were socialists. They had a socialist program. They went to a lot of trouble to develop it.
Yes.
I mean, they used to have conferences, and the program wasn't just somebody making it in a back room somewhere.
Well,
And if that's what was – you know, if you say the breakfast program or the food program that they set up, the idea was to share and to get people in – to buy into the idea that you had to have that kind of economy where we took care of each other.
Right. But I think that the Black Panther Party was a coalition of various forces. For example, George Jackson, Huey Newton, Fred Hampton considered themselves to be communists with a capital C.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Seale said he was a social democrat. Al Prentice Bunchy Carter said he was a revolutionary nationalist. And Eldridge Cleaver was a Bakunin. He was an anarchist. But the point was is they were an anti-imperialist. I mean, much like people get mad at me.
Yeah.
But like, much like the ANC, you had you know, you had
different tendencies.
Yes, but they were an anti-imperialist group, and the state didn't like them. You know, the state definitely.
Yeah, and how?
Right.
The most dramatic moment of that period was Huey Newton and others went into the California State Legislature with guns.
Yeah, that was Bob. No, Huey couldn't come because Huey had a case. They wouldn't let him come. It was Bobby Seale.
And Bobby Seale.
Yeah, they wouldn't let Huey go.
Okay, he sent somebody.
He said, yeah.
But
well, they sent them, but they said, you can't go, Huey, because you might go off.
I don't know if the National Rifle Association identified with that one. I think not.
No, they didn't.
At the bottom of the American gun issue is racism, in my opinion. That is what it's about.
Yes.
Is it that all those people running out buying guns after Obama is elected are thinking in racial terms of who they're going to kill?
Yes.
And there's not going to be law and order. They're going to be a bunch of cowboys. And that's built into the system going all the way back to slavery.
They want to kill Africans.
And they used to run patrols, you know, around the plantations. Volunteer people would ride patrols with guns.
They want to kill African people, Latinos, Muslims, anybody that—
They got an appetite.
Right.
They've tasted, like the shark, tasted blood.
Right.
We're speaking Norman Otis Richmond, Uhuru Radio. And you can find it on the net. Let's talk about a combination of athletes. One, particularly you have the name Woody Strode, really a remarkable man. I know him as a teammate of Jackie Robinson at UCLA
and Kenny Washington.
And the other guy was Kenny Washington.
Right.
At a time when there were no black athletes basically anywhere.
I think they were the first pro football players, weren't they? Was it Kenny Washington?
And that's another good story.
And Woody Strode?
Yeah. The racial bar in professional football was broken by Kenny Washington, but not because of big civil rights or anything. It's because the Memorial Coliseum in Los Angeles, which you ran a foot race in.
Right.
You were on a winning team there.
And your father built it, right?
Yep. My dad built it personally.
Right.
He had a little help, but he built it. Iron worker, but in that Coliseum, it was a public-owned Coliseum, and they said to the professional football team, Cleveland Rams, when they came to Los Angeles, you cannot discriminate against blacks because that is a public—
Put some Negroes on the field, right?
Yeah, the Negro gets to play football.
Right.
And so the Negro in question was the greatest running back in America, Kenny Washington. Anyway, tell me about Woody Strode, his teammate.
Oh, Woody Strode was from Los Angeles, California. I believe he was born in Los Angeles, California, and he went to Jefferson High School, which was Ralph Bunch went there. Which that's a minus. Alvin Ailey, Dorothy Dandridge, many people went there. And so Woody Strode went there, and he played a lot of these at that time. He had to play. I don't know if he ever played like the Uncle Tom Rose, but he wasn't a heroic person. But after a while, I mean, he was such a force. He played in the film, is it Spartacus or Spartacus?
Spartacus.
Spartacus, yeah, he played in Spartacus.
A key character in Spartacus.
Right.
Absolutely. Right. He's the one who does not kill Spartacus, but joins the rebellion.
Right.
Close call.
He played in a film called Black Jesus. Now, Black Jesus was about Patrice Lumumba. This was in the 70s. In 71, you had three films that topped the box office. The Euro-Americans had ran from to the suburbs, so the Africans in America were controlling the cities. Mm-hmm. So the biggest film of 1971 was Sweet Sweetback, which was Melvin Van Peebles' film.
It had grossed
$10 million. Mm-hmm. And made that. The second biggest film was Shaft by Gordon Parks. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they had a problem with that because they said Shaft was running around shooting people and sleeping with white women. So, the critics had a problem with that. And the third film was Black Jesus by Woody Strode.
Yeah.
And it was done by an Italian. It was Italian filmmakers. And he was a very, very outspoken person. And I was talking to Omali Ishatella, Chairman Omali Ishatella, and he said that he was speaking one time in one part of California, and Woody Strode came up to him. He was in the audience and complimenting him on his work, and he said that, Omali said that he criticized Step and Fetch It. And Woody Strode says, no, Woody, Step and Fetch It was not an Uncle Tom, you know, and he defended Step and Fetch It. But,
I'm really glad you raised that, because that's a recurring matter of people expecting prominent black athletes and performers and whatnot to turn on a previous name because that they, under the segregation systems, they had gotten work which was demeaning.
Right.
And I just read an account where Harry Belafonte came to Paul Robeson and said, you know, I sang at a Wallace rally, Henry Wallace. Left
that
wing.
Progressive Party ran for president, right?
Yeah, ran for president. And he said, they're on my case. I'm supposed to go on television, but they're asking me why I did that. He said, I'm going to tell them I was paid. Is that okay? Am I a sellout? And Robeson says, I'm never going to tell any black person.
Not to get paid.
that they shouldn't go and get the job. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm not going to do that. He understood the relationship of forces, you know.
Right.
But that is really important that to come from Woody Strode, who, by the way, some people got on, as you point out, got on his case. But I wonder what you think about that, because here we are. There's more and more discussion about the exclusion, and they always say they're going to fix it. They've been going to fix it for as long as I can remember, this thing about black actors do great performances don't get nominated. For very obvious reasons. And there's always that desire, and it's sometimes in the 30s too, there were black films.
Oh, yeah. Oscar Mouchot was a big filmmaker.
And what you described in a way, it just said, well, to heck with it. We'll make our own films. And the first thing that happens, as you know, is that the white audience says, oh, we want in on that.
Yeah. But there's money to be made. and we also can control the narrative. We can we can make you guys appear sillier than, you know. I mean, you know, you really want to see some buffoons and some clowns, let us take it, you know, and we can do that job better than you can, you know.
Yeah. Let's just quickly, in the minute we have, Jesse Owens is playing, and I don't know what's going on in this film. I just read today only one thing about it. That is that they end on what they call a down note, which is, I mean, in my mind, it may be helpful. He wins the Olympics, comes back to the United States, is celebrating him at a hotel where he's to be honored, but he has to go in the back door, and that's where the film ends.
Oh, boy. But he... was used by the state in order in 1968 Olympics. They pulled him out of the. They went and they dusted him off and got him to try to talk to John Carlos and Tommy Smith to tone it down, put some air freshener on all of this radical stuff. And of course, they respectively rejected Jesse Owens's. Because it wasn't coming from him. It was basically coming from the system.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the way they always, they always try to get someone to come in.
Yeah, they got Joe Louis to attack Muhammad Ali.
Right.
They got Jackie Robinson to attack everybody for a while.
Right.
One detail I might share with you, you probably know it, is that he came home from the Olympics and campaigned for Alf Landon, the Republican, against Franklin Roosevelt.
But at that time, African people were Republicans as a whole, right?
Of course they were. Jackie Robinson, of course, because that was the party of Lincoln. And they hadn't – that party had not yet made a play for the for the Southern racist vote.
Right.
So nominally, although it was not at all, they didn't fight, but nominally they were in favor of integration and until the big compromise when Ronald Reagan – raised the Confederate flag for him again, and everybody changed sides. It's like, okay, everybody take your uniforms off, cross the field. Norman Otis Richmond, it's a great pleasure to have you, and this is a highlight for me of Black History Month. And
I would like to say that we talked about African Liberation Month. I think Desmond Cole, he's a lot younger than me, and I think he has an energy. I think he's going to start a campaign to – promote African Liberation Month as opposed to Black History Month. So you can look for some fire from him.
Well, you brought us the news. Thank you. I hope you'll sit in here. We're going to be talking to Steve Gowans. I suspect you're interested.
He's in Eritrea, right?
Pardon me?
He lives in Eritrea?
Oh, no. Stephen Gowans is gowans.wordpress.com, and he is a commentator on things to do.
I'm thinking about Mountain. Yeah, I'm thinking about
his that. Basic theme. He has a great title for his site. It's called What's Left? Even though I've been talking to him for years, I'm always a little confused as to which way we're putting that expression. So it stays in your mind.
All right.
And he's going to give us a bona fide Marxist account of what is taking place in
Groucho Marx or Karl?
Yeah, I think it's mainly Karl, although I suspect he probably appreciates Groucho. We can ask him ourselves.